Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm the most scientific, the most artistic, the most creative. I'm the greatest scientific fighter of all time.
Welcome to the History of the Heavyweight Championship, a podcast series from Yahoo with me, Steve Bunce.
And odds are, I don't get knocked out.
In this continuing series, I will look at 1 year in the sport's history. The main fighters, their great nights, their failures, and the dramatic and crazy changes in the sport that took place during the 70s.
The right uppercut did the job. I don't think he's going to make it, friend.
This is the History of the Heavyweight Championship. Every one of the main fighters. It is the decade of champions. 1974 was a year of quite ridiculous extremes in fights for the heavyweight championship of the world. There was an exotic stop in Venezuela, and in Zaire, the world watched a very special fight in late October, one that nobody will ever forget. The Rumble in the Jungle is boxing's most famous fight. George Foreman was the heavyweight champion at the start of the year, scary and unbeaten. Men in the boxing business marvelled at his power, his brute strength. Big George carried fear, expected his opponents to fall, and he was right, they did. Foreman summed it up perfectly. Even when I look bad, I'm hurting people. Even when I miss, they suffer. In 1973, he had not missed too often and had dropped and beaten Joe Frazier to win the title. Frazier was knocked down 6 times and once was actually lifted off his feet. It is a disturbing image, iron jaw smoking Joe being bounced all over the ring. There was a genuine feeling that nobody could beat Foreman at that time. That he was some type of new giant of the sport. Everybody then, and still now, talks about Big George. Big George, like he is some type of monster. Oddly, Foreman's dimensions are, by modern standards of the heavyweight division, not that impressive. He was 6'3 and weighed just 15'7" when he beat Frazier. Sure, that's taller than Mike Tyson, but 2 inches shorter than Lennox Lewis and over 2 stone lighter than Anthony Joshua. Mark Cram, the American writer and author, did see a bit of caution in the destruction. George had a fatal love affair of his strength and punch. It was an understandable obsession and a flaw. Foreman had his next fight ready.
In announcing the fight yesterday in Los Angeles, Foreman just did beat a January 21st deadline imposed by boxing's governing bodies, the World Boxing Council and the WBA. Announce a fight by then, he was told, or be stripped of the crown he won a year ago from Joe Frazier in Jamaica.
I need a fight. The bills keep rolling along. Lawyers are sleeping at my doorstep. And I like to tell Ken Norton that he's a blessing in disguise. Well, I like to tell you what I think of Ken Norton. It's pretty much taken from a wise man. You know what a steamroll is? Well, I like to get a steamroller, lay Ken Norton down, and run over and mash him flat.
Outside of that, do you like it?
Outside of that, I like it.
Well, good morning. This is quite a big step from, I'd say, about a year ago at this time. I was contemplating quitting more than once. I thought about that. And through fighting Muhammad and the hard work of my ex-trainer, Eddie Futch, my backers, I've made it, you know, pretty near the top now, and I feel that during this fight that I would prove myself a very worthy challenger for George's title.
In March, Foreman made his second defense of the heavyweight title when he traveled to Caracas, Venezuela to fight Kenny Norton. In 1973, Norton had beaten and then lost to Ali, both fights ending in tight split decisions. Muhammad Ali was in Caracas, ringside and baiting everybody. Ali and Foreman already had a deal in place to fight that September in Zaire for the title. Ali announced it just before the live broadcast of the fight. dropped it in a few seconds before the first bell. The fight in Zaire would be called the Rumble in the Jungle. But first, Foreman had to beat Norton, and that was, according to Ali, not simple. "People still don't recognise George," said Ali at ringside. "I predict an upset. Kenny Norton winning by late knockout. He will whoop this chump." Always the same from Ali. It was not the universal view. Huey McElveny of The Observer had taken a long, detailed and hard look at the two fighters in Caracas before making his considered observations. McElveny's microscope was not taken lightly. One sudden, demolishing intervention by Foreman. One clubbing swing of a right arm, so powerful it is almost obscene, may consign Norton's skills, strategy and dreams to oblivion. Norton knew how dangerous his Caracas job was. He was not a fool. If one of his big punches even half catches you, you are in trouble. But Norton also had sound reasoning. He was not there as a sacrifice. "I fought Muhammad Ali twice, broke his jaw, and I think I won both fights. How can Foreman psych me?" Norton also had a plan if Foreman tried to push him and shove him. Foreman had dismissed Frazier, moved him about the ring like that father. One you suspect is secretly a bully, tormenting his small child. Norton wanted respect. "If not," he said, "I will hit him in the testicles." It was all part of a fantasy, a crazy, delusional mistake. The first round is terrific. Foreman does land and Norton takes the shot. Norton catches Foreman. It is explosive. It is all over in round two and it is a blur, a confusing blur of violence. Norton is clipped by a right and left hook and right uppercut and bounces into the ropes. And as he comes back upright, Foreman whacks him again. It was not illegal, just instinctive. The referee gives an 8 count. You see, if the ropes had not been there, then Norton would have been on his back. Norton is running out of time. He is dropped into the ropes again, same thing, but the ref does not count. He just breaks the pair up. Norton had no idea where he was at that moment, but he tries to stand and land his own punches. He's fighting back. Foreman connects with 4 punches, all clean and sickening. The last, a left hook, drops Norton heavily. They are the punches that boxing fools think they can avoid. Norton beats the count just, stumbles in his own corner as his trainers get up and call it off. Foreman has left the neutral corner to hover less than 2 feet from Norton. Is he there to continue hitting Norton or to offer comfort? It's hard to tell. The fight is over at exactly 2 minutes of round two. Foreman was beaming. "I think I'm just blessed. I hit a guy and it's magic. You see him crumbling to the floor. God has given me these gifts." Foreman had knocked out Joe Frazier in 2 rounds and Kenny Norton in 2 rounds. Foreman had beaten the 2 men who beat Ali. He didn't just beat them, he destroyed them. Nobody is laughing at the prospect of Ali fighting Foreman. McElveny again, this time in the aftermath of Norton's awful defeat. The vast arms often brush contemptuously through efforts at parrying defence. That ability to destroy from a distance will be an immediate threat to Ali. Before the first bell sounds in Zaire for the Rumble in the Jungle, the obits for Ali's boxing career and even his life are everywhere. Big Huey might just have set the ball rolling. However, on that brief and exhilarating night in Caracas, Ali takes a second and has his say. Sure, Foreman is a killer if you stand and let him beat you to death. But who is crazy enough to think Muhammad will do that? The problem is, Norton was not standing there. He was moving well, covering up, connecting with good punches, and still, well, Foreman cut him down like an axe chopping through a watermelon. Ali had his own opinion.
"When I first started listening, hitting power didn't mean nothing because usually I fix it where they can't find nothing to hit. So I never worry about hitting power. So a man like George that comes out with those big... that's where he throwing me, draws them back. Hey, watch out, here come the left. Here come the right. Get ready, here come another left. That's what I hear when he's throwing them. So I don't believe that I'm going to be knocked out and punched around. Experience is why I know I'll win. Ali fights great. He's got speed and endurance. If you sign to fight him, increase your insurance.
The Rumble in the Jungle was officially announced the next day. $5 million each. The deal had been put together by Don King. The clock was ticking.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
The original date for the fight was September 25th, but 8 days before, Foreman was cut above his right eye in sparring. The fight was not off, but Foreman and Ali wanted to leave Zaire's capital, Kinshasa. The truth is, both had been in Africa too long and wanted some comforts. The fight was put back until October the 30th. Everybody in the Ali camp knew that if Foreman left, he was not coming back. Africa was taking a toll on both of them, and it had been a long, long journey even before the cut-eye delay. In New York, before leaving, Ali had threatened journalists with the cooking pot in Africa if they continued to doubt him. The president of Zaire, Mobutu Sese Seko, was not happy and had one of his lackeys call up Ali and tell him, "We are not cannibals." It was all part of the Rumble story. Then in Africa, there was another slip from Ali when he said that he was not impressed with the African women. Apparently, they were too dark. Another apology was issued. However, there was no shortage of female drama for Ali in Zaire during his nearly 60 days there. Ali and women. The stories are hard to invent. His wife, Belinda, attacked him one afternoon, scratching his face. She was very upset at the presence of teenager Veronica Pulsh, part of the publicity team. Pulsh was fast enough to scarp her when Belinda went for Ali. Belinda was then seen in the African city with a Foreman badge on her blouse. Foreman, meanwhile, had vowed to be celibate for 75 days. When Ali arrived in Africa, he told the hundreds at the airport that Big George was a Belgian. It was his business manager, Jean Kilroy's idea. The Belgians had ruled in the Congo until Zaire's independence. When Foreman arrived, he came off the plane with his German shepherd, Dago. The Belgians had used the same dogs as a weapon of oppression. Ali owned Africa long before the night of the fight. As the reconvened fight approached, the fear for Ali's safety intensified. Sooner or later, the champion will land one of his sledgehammer punches, and for the first time in his career, Muhammad Ali will be counted out. That could happen in the very first round. Dave Anderson, New York Times. He doesn't fight you, he mugs you. His fights are as one-sided as a shark bite. Whatever he hits, clots. Jim Murray, Los Angeles Times. George is the first I've been with in the ring I know can kill you. Eddie Bossman Jones, former Foreman sparring partner and poached to work with Ali for the fight. I was praying in great sincerity that George wouldn't kill Ali. I really felt that was a possibility. Archie Moore, one of Foreman's trainers. On the night, Kilroy, who was Ali's great facilitator and friend, went to Foreman's changing room to watch the champion's bandages being applied. Kilroy went back to Ali, trying to be upbeat, but knowing his face would reveal the fear that even he felt. His heart, Gene would tell me, was heavy. Ali asked Gene what they had been saying. Kilroy said that Archie Moore was repeating, "I smell death in the air." Ali took that in for a second and then jumped up, throwing punches. He put together a shuffle or two, his eyes alive again, the men at his side, men that had been there through the hell, through the exile, through the terrible conflicts and through the pain of the Frazier defeat, men both loyal and committed to Ali. They started to come alive, to believe. They started to forget their fears. "Rumble, young man, rumble," Bundini Brown hollered. The room had been transformed. The dream was back on, the miracle was there, and the call to walk came. Ali, with the men that loved him, all walked to their destiny. to a fight that the world would never forget, on a night of drama the world will never see again. Ali had said, "Only a man who knows what it is to be defeated can reach down to the bottom of his soul and come up with the extra ounce of power it takes to win when the match is even." Ali was about to travel to the very bottom of his soul. Ali, Bombay, the crowd of 66,000 chanted. It meant Ali, kill him. The crowd cheered each Ali jab. Ali was on his toes, as expected, for a round. But then he went to the ropes. Angelo Dundee and the team in the corner screamed for him to move off the ropes. Some in the team were crying. "I felt sick when he went to the ropes," admitted Dundee. It was certainly not part of the plan. Ali explained how it happened later and insisted that he had not entered that ring on that momentous night with a plan to sit on the ropes and block punches. "I couldn't dance all night. I decided between rounds what I had to do. It was dubbed rope-a-dope, but it was in reality the biggest risk any fighter could ever take against a man with Foreman's power." But by the end of round six, the fight was poised. Foreman was slowing down, walking through treacle in the 80 degrees of an African dawn. Ali kept throwing the stiff jab. Foreman kept standing right in front of him and whacking away at body, head and arms. Ali kept on talking and taunting. By the start of round eight, a miracle was in the air. It had been 10 years since Ali had pulled off his first boxing miracle when he had beat Sonny Liston to win the World Heavyweight Championship. 10 long and often lonely years. But he had transformed the sport. He was sport's biggest attraction. And here in the African night, he would show the world why he was the greatest. With about 18 seconds left in round eight, Muhammad Ali did the impossible, the unimaginable, and knocked out the invincible George Foreman. Foreman was caught and reeled and started to fall, resisting the end like the proud man he was. And Ali swiveled like a ballerina as Foreman twisted, lost his feet, stumbled and started to drop in hefty, resigned, beaten installments. Ali had his right hand ready to land one more punch at any time if Foreman somehow defied gravity and remained on his feet. Foreman hits the canvas with 11 seconds left in round eight. He struggles up, just failing to beat the count of 10. The fight is over. Ali is the new heavyweight champion of the world and has won the Rumble in the Jungle and is the greatest boxer of all time. There is pandemonium in the ring. Ali faints, sits down, but is soon up and leading the crowd in one final triumphant rendition of Ali Bombay. Poor Foreman slips away under the cover of Ali's celebrations. He is broken and will use excuses for over 10 years, claiming he was drugged, the ropes were slack, the count was fast. It takes a long time for his pride to allow him to admit he lost.
I would love a rematch, and I'm not 100% content that I lost the fight fairly. I didn't lose the fight fairly. There was some element within the count. All champions and past champions have had a chance to go down, no matter how hard, and get up and fight. Once these, everything that, after they've been probed and explained, morally, he will feel that he will have to fight me again.
Ali took the rest of the year off. The rivals, the contenders, the dreamers circled his throne. Big George Foreman would not fight again until 1976. Amazingly, in 1994, Foreman, wearing the same red shorts, regains the World Heavyweight title. Muhammad Ali had taken care of some other unfinished business in the ring in January of 1974, 9 months before the Rumble in the Jungle, and it is a fight that is always, always forgotten. It was Ali and Frazier 2, the one where the pair had a fight, a rolling on the floor in a studio fight, yes, just 5 days before the first bell at Madison Square Garden. The unofficial referee for the studio lunacy was Howard Cosell, the TV broadcast icon, and a man with a divided audience. Ali called Frazier ignorant during the televised interview, and off to the side, Ali's brother Rachman had been relentlessly goading poor Joe. It proved too much, and Ali and Frazier got to grappling. Frazier was not bothered. Ali looked shaken up. Frazier had been in some far darker places than Ali. He had lived a life on the streets of Philadelphia. Perhaps not as nasty as Foreman's history, but Frazier knew about having to fight. There was a great joke before the rumble in the jungle when somebody in the press pack asked Foreman if he minds fighting at 3 a.m. Foreman laughs and tells the man, "Most of my fights have been at 3 a.m. He was telling the truth. Frazier and Ali both receive a whopping $5,000 fine from the New York Commission for the fight in the TV studio. It was not a pantomime.
The deplorable conduct of Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier demeaned the sport of boxing to such a degree that the New York State Athletic Commission is impelled to take punitive action. It is the unanimous decision of the New York State Athletic Commission members that Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier be fined $5,000 each. If there's a recurrence of this type of conduct at the weigh-in on Sunday, another similar fine will be imposed.
It's certainly unsportsmanlike to see two professional former champions wrestling on the floor when people have paid millions of dollars to see them fight one another Monday night. I think that's the crux of the whole thing. I think that athletes with the stature that these two men have can perform a little better.
The rematch between Frazier and Ali is not quite the fight of the century 2, but it is a good fight. Ali wins on points over 12 rounds. He wins by a few rounds, but his tactic of holding infuriates Frazier's trainer, Eddie Futch, who has taken over full-time duties in the corner and the gym because Yank Durham had died suddenly the previous summer. It is just one of the things on Joe's mind on the night in the fight. Futch pleads with the referee, Tony Perez, between rounds about Ali's holding. You gotta stop it! Futch compiles a detailed dossier of the 133 holds that Ali uses in the 12-round fight. Eddie was serious. Their overall score in fights is now 1-1, but a third fight will happen in late 1975. It will be called the Thriller in Manila, and it will be the greatest fight ever. Frazier has one other fight in 1974, a repeat win over Jerry Quarry back at Madison Square Garden in June. The pair had been in the Ring Magazine Fight of the Year in 1969. Frazier won then, and he won the second fight in round 5. Joe Bugner won 5 times, including over 10 rounds against former world champion Jimmy Ellis at the Empire Paul Wembley. Bugner would get a world title fight against Ali in 1975. Norton had a win to end his dreadful year and would get another world title fight and a third crack at Ali in 1976. Ron Lyle, the convicted killer from Denver, had 4 good wins in 1974 and he would get Ali for the world title the following year. The invisible man, Jimmy Young, knocked out Yorkshire scaffolder Richard Dunn at a plush hotel in London in February and drew with Ernie Shavers over 10 rounds in November. Young would finally get his world title fight in 1976. Larry Holmes had been part of Ali's sparring squad in Zaire, but had returned to Eastern Pennsylvania when the fight was delayed. Larry was given $500 for his work. In 1974, he had 3 fights, all wins, and finished the year 10-0. A man called Chuck Wepner, he once lost a bloodbath of a fight to Sonny Liston, finished 1974 with a foul-filled fight against another heavyweight tough guy, Terry Hinckley. Wepner lost 4 points for butting, hitting low and biting, but he won in the 11th round. Chuck was picked for Ali's first defence of the World Heavyweight Championship in early March of the following year. It was odd, and it gave the world Rocky. What a time to be in the world of boxing.
Well, I want to fight Joe Frazier and George Foreman in one night to solve all this stuff about who's the greatest. I beat Foreman. He's got excuses. The count was too slow. The ring was soft, and the canvas was all this stuff. And ropes are loose, and Frazier's talking about he's got a new punch now, and he's ready, and he beat me twice, but I barely won, or whatever. I'm going to beat both of them in one night. I want Frazier first for 10 rounds. And after I whoop Joe Frazier, I want George Foreman for 10 rounds. And I guarantee that I'll whoop them both. And after I whoop Frazier, whether it's a third round knockout, whether it's a decision or what, I want 1 minute rest. I want George Foreman to jump right in the ring. And I make this statement to the whole world. I'm seriously trying to get Joe Frazier and George Foreman in one night and to go down as the greatest fight of all time. Some of them still have doubt and making excuses. I want to whip both of these men in one night, and I'll have a record that nobody can touch.
Ali, Ali, and Ali, and men that made him great. Foreman was one of those men, and he knew before the Rumble in the Jungle what all the best heavyweights have since discovered. I can beat Ali and knock him out in the first or second round, but it doesn't mean that people are going to follow me with the same enthusiasm they did him. So, so true. Everybody is second. It had been some year. If you're enjoying this tour through the best of boxing history, you can find more transcripts, archive videos, historical images in the boxing section of the Yahoo UK sports site. That's uk.sports.yahoo.com/boxing. The history of the heavyweight championship is written and recorded by me, Steve Bunce, produced by Yahoo UK, with editing and sound design by Lolita Laguna.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.